Say, when you go to McDonald's for all those good things to eat and drink, be sure you stop and think about what to do when you're through. Don't forget to feed the wastebaskets, because they're hungry too.
That's right, we are. And we'd like to ask a favor of you. Would you mind letting us have the paper, please, when you're through? It's a special little treat when we get to eat the paper. Yes, indeed. So if you've got a cup or a napkin or bag that you don't think you need, don't forget to feed. Don't forget to feed the waste baskets at McDonald's. In McDonald's Land.
Here, do me a favor and say something really smart, really intelligent sounding.
You are out of luck.
Excellent. Okay, so let me just wanted to make sure we were recording everything.
Hello.
Hello. It's I got you, me, and Sam.
Sweet, Sam. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you been?
Damn, man, you sound good. You sound clear. Am I still sounding like a can on the end of a string?
you sound acceptable.
Yeah, it's always been my just barely passable. That's all right. Whatever.
No, Sam has upgraded his technology from our last show.
Oh,
yes,
cool.
I've stepped out of the dark ages.
I was listening to it, and it was like there was this constant hum in the background the whole show. So We took care of that.
That really sucked too, because I had gone to such great pains to make sure that I was in a completely silent environment, and still just could not overcome my crappy technology.
No, well, I think I sound a little echoey today because
You sound like you might be in a some type of silo.
I am. I'm in a grain silo, or it could be an old missile silo. I'm not sure what it is.
Hey man, did you get to watch the promo I sent you?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, for God's sake. I know. I was hoping you'd get on here and rave about it.
Jesus. Okay, hold on. I can start. Well, I can't start downloading it because I don't
know. It's going to take an hour.
All right. Well, I'll rave about it anyway. Man, it's really good. I'm surprised. Good.
I thought you'd like it.
I'm really digging it, man. I think it's going to be your best work yet.
What? It was for what?
It was for this this thing you did.
Thank you, Mr. Specific.
Some project.
Where you walked and videotaped.
Yeah, the AT film I'm working on called Flip Flop Flippin', which should be available at Amazon coming up sometime February, hopefully. And let's go to a clip. That's the promo pretty much right there.
It's really good, though. I can't wait to see it again.
Right.
We don't have our favorite British person. I think I can call him British. I can't call him English. I can call him British. Anyway, he doesn't have electricity.
Why can't you call him English? He is English.
No, he's not. He's
no, that's sensitive.
Yeah. The English occupied his land, so we shouldn't call him that.
Where does he live, in Wales?
Mm-mm.
No, he lives in England. But he's not English.
No, but he's Irish.
Exactly.
Oh.
He just sounds English. He lives in England.
Because he's from England.
I believe he moved when he was young, but he lived in Ireland, and he considers himself Irish, so I can call him British because that's part of the British Empire, I suppose.
Well, that's our show. Good night.
No, he has no electricity because he lives in a socialist country, right? So they turn the electricity off every second night. They don't. Actually, it's some sort of upgrade thing. So anyway... it's just the three of us today.
If you listen to a lot of teabaggers, apparently we live in a socialist country as well.
Now you're going to get us in trouble again.
Who cares? Fucking retards. Anyway, wow.
Wow. Should
have had that second cup of coffee. Yeah.
Dropped the tard bomb there on the show.
Did. No, I just said that because it's the Christmas season.
Okay, so we're going to try not to lose any more listeners. And...
I have a lot, actually not a lot of friends, but people I respect who adhere to certain Tea Party principles, actually. You know, I'm all for self-sufficiency. all for that. I just believe that, you know, we can help each other out through governmental means. Let's go to a clip.
Let's go to a clip. Is there a clip about that? I don't know
no,
if there is.
I just, you know, when I make a mediocre comment, I like to follow up with that.
Just go to a clip. Yeah, I too have friends of all political persuasions and don't hold anything against them. Anyway, so here we are, Bigfoot Show, episode number 29, actually our 28th episode, but it's number 29 because that's how we are. And we will be talking today about many things. This is me filling while I try to find my page with the topics on it. Did you guys see the topics that I posted?
I did.
It seems pretty good. Pretty good new topic.
So my question for you guys starting off is, how much would you pay for a Bigfoot steak? And I would like that both in per pound and then how big would you like it to be?
Tartar.
Okay.
I'm not stuttering. I don't think I would pay for something that I thought was it.
Did we just lose him?
He did just kind of fade out.
The show was 5 minutes in. All right, well, there he is. He's back.
Yeah, no, it's this when the phone rings here, because you can probably hear it really loudly.
Yes.
It cuts the internet off for a few seconds. So let me the other phone. I'm going to put it in a drawer. There we go.
You know, you have to keep the string pulled tight in order for the tin can to transfer the sound waves.
No, I've always been bad at physics.
So
we're on fire today.
Yeah, well, we're 5 minutes in, 6 minutes in, we haven't talked about anything.
Staggering right along.
All right, so Bigfoot steak. First of all, I'm going to say, you don't call it a steak. It's not a steak.
It's a specimen.
It's a sample. It's not a steak. Anyway.
You know, it's just more Biscardi horseshit. It's just, you know, and I'm torn that we're actually talking about this.
But not that way. He didn't even coin that term, though, right?
It was the Sierra Boys, right?
Yes, I think. But no, but Biscardi wasn't the first one to start referring to it as a, you know, food-related item.
Right. But they went on his show, which I believe has won 5 Emmys. But do you have Emmys for radio shows?
No, they don't.
But then, they went on and talked, and then he offered that he would be willing to pay $50,000 for it. How he's going to steal that money, I don't know. It's just another example of how full of crap he is. And
yeah, I totally agree. My question, let's not talk about Tom Biscardi because it leaves a nasty taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
How much is a sample like that worth? I mean, let's just say you got 2 pounds of, you know, Bigfoot flesh.
Wow.
How do you put value on that?
It really is Bigfoot, it's valueless. I mean, there is no monetary amount you could put on something like that.
Would there also, I'm wondering if there's any legal issues associated with that. Let's say this is theoretically, it actually is a Slabo Sasquatch. And through DNA testing, you were able to determine that this is from a primate, it's an unknown primate, found in an area, blah, blah, blah. What would the legal, if any, issues would there be in selling it? Because wouldn't it maybe be protected under some existing law, like, you know, not killing an unknown species?
You know, my take on that kind of that line of reasoning is that this thing is so unusual and would be such an important artifact that I think that any existing law meant to protect animals that we know to exist probably would apply, but I don't believe that they would be enforced. So it isn't like they're going to write you a ticket for having a Bigfoot steak because you've got Filet-O-Swatch, so it's going to be kind of a big deal.
I would think
a little bigger of a deal than, like,
totally just saw that in my head on a real fancy menu with lots of swirls.
Filet-O-Swatch
wrapped in bacon served with mushrooms.
That might be the name of this episode, and we're only 10 minutes in. I got Filet-O-Squatch already.
Good. You're very good at the title. I mean, for those out there, both of our listeners, Brian exclusively picks the titles for the shows, and I think he does an excellent job. So send a bunch of emails to him saying how great he is for doing it.
All right, now the leader in today's episode naming contest is Vallejo Squatch. So anyway, I'm sorry. I let's continue.
Yeah. Okay, Dave, to answer your original question, medium rare with a little bit of A1.
Well, so it is a valuable thing. Clearly, he doesn't have $50,000. I think it's worth quite a bit. But this kind of goes to the... I guess my biggest problem with this is that I don't believe anyone should be out there doing this because they want to strike it rich with a body, right? I mean, that's why you're doing this, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons, I think.
Well, he didn't actually even offer to put up the money, right? It was something about he would put it into escrow,
right?
Pending verification or whatever.
Right.
Well, to his credit, he's smart enough to realize that, you know, if he got this thing in his hands and it proved to be Bigfoot, the worth that he could make off of that would far exceed the 50 G's that he had to put into escrow in the first place to get it.
Totally.
At least in that regard, he's being, you know, somewhat savvy.
And I think he's clearly a savvy guy. But again, this is my problem. It's not about how much money can you make off the damn thing. Is it? I don't think it is.
It is for him. I mean, I think he genuinely believes that he genuinely wants to make money, and genuinely he's really more full of shit than anybody associated with the phenomenon. I mean, there's nobody more, and not in a, like, psychotic way, kind of like how Bekjord was, God rest his tortured soul. But and we've said it before on the show, he's almost cartoonishly a con man. He is. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming that he's just, you know, I would just love to see his childhood. I mean, whoever raised this guy almost from the get-go must have been that, you know, life is horrible. It's okay to lie continually to people all the time because that's how you get by, Tommy. Okay, Daddy. Can we look at the Loch Ness corpse in the refrigerator again? Shut up. Weed the hill.
Excellent. All right, so maybe it's worth 50 grand on the open market, but
do I keep derailing this?
No, this is great. This is gold, man.
I don't think the true value of it is in the dollar amount. I think the true value is in what it does
right.
in terms of
right.
of science and society and our knowledge of our world and
right.
and all of those higher things.
I totally agree with that.
Maybe there could be like a combination of Biscardi eating the steak. You know, he's got the silverware and he's eating it, but at the same time, a guy in a lab coat is right next to him doing the analysis.
So on the front end or the back end?
You mean of the animal or the sample?
Yes.
I don't know. I think that would be kind of really entertaining, is that you could have both. But again, since Biscardi would be involved, the chances of having any type of validity would be minimal.
Okay, so we're talking about the sample as if we don't. Is this thing really a Bigfoot steak?
No, it's horror. It's dude. I can't even believe. I mean, I'm impressed how dry. Actually, Sam has remained. Actually, seems more serious about it than you or I am. But you know, Sam's a rookie and he's a great addition to the show. But
I haven't been completely corrupted yet. So
no,
it's true.
Of innocence in me.
I think it's close to just obviously being, you know, almost, you know, intentionally bullshitty in a humorous way, perhaps. I didn't listen to the interview, but from what I've read, I mean, offering up as Bigfoot's, you know, it just has that kitschiness, goofiness about it that they're just almost Andy Kaufman-esque about it. That
it kind of smells like that suit in the freezer thing, doesn't it? All over again.
Oh yeah, I mean, but that's Biscardi's way. I guess that's all he knows.
Maybe it just smells like Biscardi, and anything that touches him smells like that.
Yeah, I think that could be the alternate title to the episode. Smells like Biscardi.
I'll put that on the list. Smells like Biscardi.
My third favorite Nirvana song of all time.
But I mean, at this point, I think that it's almost a lost cause, just because of how it's been.
The Sierra thing.
Yes. It's just because of how it's been handled. You know, there's no true provenance to the sample. You know, what's to say that you know, Biscardi couldn't be in this from the get-go, and they get a big sample of a rhesus monkey from God only knows where, and pass that off as this Bigfoot steak or fillet or whatever you want to call it.
Filet-O-Squatch.
And they proceed with it. I mean, you have to realize you're talking about someone that thought that they could take a costume, stick a possum in it, freeze it, and actually go somewhere with that. So you can't underestimate the desperation / business savvy / crazy that these
evil people, is that the evil. Other word you're looking for?
Do you think this? So is Biscardi doing this just for the attention, or does he actually make money off of this? Like right now, today?
He may make a little bit. He's just a con man. There's no other word for him. He's just a complete psycho. I mean, although I think he's fully cognizant of what he's doing. But somehow he doesn't, whatever that part of the brain or soul that most people have, it's been so diminished in him that he just doesn't even remotely think it's wrong. You know, I guess he maybe justifies it by, oh, you know, it's just all fun, man. It's just fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it's clearly not presented as such. It's clearly presented to, he's trying to get people to believe something that is patently in all astronomical probability false. And here we are still talking about this idiot 15 minutes into the show. See, he's worked. That's all he wants. He just wants people talking about
it. So, let's segue, because I believe the Sierra boys, I don't know, what do we call them? The guys that supposedly shot a couple of Bigfoot in the Sierras.
Yeah.
Do they have a name?
Well, hey, can I make one
catchy
quick
handle?
Point?
Oh, go ahead. Make your quick point.
No, I was just going to say real quick in relation to what Sam had said, you know, about, and I wouldn't put it past Biscardi to take something like a slab of a rhesus monkey. But the thing is, clearly, if you would want me to seriously investigate this any farther, really listen in any kind of serious way to the rest, you take the meat, you get DNA, you test it. And but it's in all, again, strong probability, that's not going to happen with him, because his track record is consistently over and over and over. Oh, we've got a Bigfoot, you know, hand. We've got, you know, Bigfoot in a freezer, and how many other countless pieces of horse shit he's thrown out in the world. It's just how many, he's just looking for the naive people who haven't heard about him before. But fortunately, we provide the social service.
That's what we're here for.
Of constantly reminding people of how messed up he is. Now, Tom, if you ever listen to this, remember, if you're thinking about suing me, truth is a defense.
And of course, all opinions expressed by Scott Harriet on the Bigfoot Show are his own.
Come on, you believe what you.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sitting here. I'm not arguing with you.
I think Sam would say that. I don't know. I think it would be.
He doesn't do us a lot of help.
He would be a great subject of a documentary, though. But like you guys were alluding, how savvy he is. I don't think he would ever allow that. And in fact, wasn't when he was filmed for that one documentary that's out, I think he kind of nixed it going forward because he didn't want people to find out, or more people to find out, how full of shit he is.
Which one is that?
There was a clip. It's on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
And it was some guy, just I think kind of an independent documentarian, and he actually, Biscardi was part of it, and it was suggesting, in a kind of serio comic way, you know, and just presenting him as that he's obviously a con man, but that he didn't. What I had read was that Biscardi was kind of threatening to sue him, and I think he is very savvy in those regards. He knows all about that, you know, what he can technically get away with without direct legal ramifications. But I don't know. I still think you could probably make a pretty good case of fraud against him if anybody has provided money to him for his claims of cryptozoological prowess, as it were.
So didn't the Sierra guys submit a sample to Melba Ketchum?
Yes.
And we know how that turned out.
So we're going to segue here to Melba posted to Facebook yesterday the following. This was her status update. from yesterday. She said, for all the people speculating on the Ericsson project, Adrian and I have agreed to set aside the NDA to tell you that his group is a successful participant in this project. His research project to obtain the DNA samples is separate from us. His samples will be in the paper along with all of the successful submitters. And yes, his great footage will come out, so let's let all of the rumors go, okay? And once again, please know that we are at the mercy of the journal as to when we can announce things. So the reason why this is interesting is because, I mean, is that website even back up yet? It seemed like the Ericsson project kind of just went away.
You know, the more I hear Melba Ketchum type or read what she types, I think she's a little kooky. I think she's, I mean, I'm just looking at her photo on Facebook. It's a little like, I raise horses and I wanted to be a model at one time. So I'm wearing a lot of makeup right now.
Did you see the picture she posted of the baby deer and the cat?
I don't know. She is kind of got that quasi new agey blinders on type of vibe about her that it's just the more you hear that comes at her, it's like, I mean, we talked about it on the last show. I think Paul concurred. I think we all kind of concurred. It probably wasn't anything substantial going to come out of this, any kind of peer review affirmation. And now I just think she's either, or perhaps it's a combination of wishful thinking, or she's trying to stay in the limelight a little bit, maybe some dough, whatever it is. It's not very scientific. It's all hints. And keep posting. Come back next week. Well, you know, it's just not, you know, if you got something like this, here's an idea. Shut the hell up about it and then present it when you actually have the peer review evidence. Yeah. Otherwise, you come off as not fully Biscardi, but quasi-Biscardi-esque in your attempts to get attention.
Well, it's the perfect Bigfoot storm. You have the unfortunate Bigfoot enthusiast who has suffered year after year after year of having their hopes gotten up only to be squashed. Then you have this.
What the hell is that? Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt, Sam. Is there some kind of pig in the room? What the hell? Brian, is there a dog near you or something? I thought I heard some snorting.
No.
Okay. Are you doing blow again?
Not right now.
Sorry. Okay, Sam, go ahead. I'm just hearing this. I'm hearing this.
No, I hear it too. It sounds like somebody's dragging a trash bag over the microphone.
Really?
That's a very good description. I think somehow Biscardi has just tapped in, and him and Melba Ketchum are listening, each sharing a headphone earpiece. Anyway, go ahead, Sam.
Well, what I was saying is you know, you have this poor downtrodden Bigfoot enthusiast who,
yeah,
you know, who, I mean, almost makes a living out of getting their hopes up only to be dashed. And yeah, then you have this, you know, this project come along, and they are promising once again that this is it. You know, this is going to be the next big thing, and just be patient. Well, you're asking the wrong people to be patient. You know, these are people who are accustomed to, you know, trying to be patient only to see their hopes and dreams dashed again and again. Yeah. And on top of that, you're fueling this with these little, you know, status updates and leaks and blog posts. That's just not it's just a recipe for frustration and aggravation. Yeah. And, you know,
another great title for this episode, by the way, recipe for frustration.
But it is. And it's so the story of Bigfoot. It's. You know, let's get our hopes up, and let's get crapped on in the end.
You know, along those same lines, I'm looking at Melba's page here, and this guy, and I think this guy might be involved with the Ericsson project or somewhat associated. At the top, he posted on her wall, Dan A. Nadrello.
Yeah, Dan Nadrello.
Okay.
Used to be.
I love what he writes. Thanks. He writes to Melba, thanks for taking the time to address the situation. It is nice to see after so much speculation. Yes. Hello, pot. Kettle calling. What are you kidding me? I mean, she's the queen of speculation. She says, instead of letting the peer review process go through and see if there actually is something, she says, oh, no, it is. It is. It's definitely. Well, how do you know, Linda? Did the crystals tell you that? Or did the actual science tell you that?
The only thing that keeps me See, the reason why this isn't Biscardi-esque
it isn't fully Biscardi-esque. No. That's why I said quasi-Biscardi. It's not, I don't know if Melba's really trying to be, and I don't think so. She seems like a pretty sweet lady. She's not trying to con people.
Right.
But it's this airy-fairy kind of head in the clouds, wishful thinking vibe that seems to emanate from her and her posts. And
unlike someone who really is just trying to lead everyone on, I mean, the process that she's going through, you could kind of see how it would take this long. So, I mean, there is sort of in the back of your mind, even though I completely agree with everything Sam has said so far, that this is just like yet another, you know, getting our hopes up just to smash us against the rocks. It could, I mean, there's a sliver of like plausibility to how long this might take. Now, it isn't helped by the fact that, and now she's essentially, what she's saying here publicly is that the Erickson project is totally unrelated to her work and sort of separate, but it doesn't help that the Erickson project page has disappeared. The Erickson project appears to have exploded. I don't know. I mean, I totally agree, except that she just doesn't smell like a Biscardi.
No. And that's why, again, I use the quasi prefix, because I don't know. I just think what we might have here is an example of people who are kind of numbskulls intellectually congregating together to come together in a really, at best, mediocre project, who don't really quite understand the scientific process. And like, oh, the Erickson project. Yes, let me talk to my horse about that. See what, you know, kind of mean today. Anyway, it just seems like there's a bunch of numbskulls involved in this thing. They don't, you know, it's like they talk about all this. And, you know, I literally, if I had $50,000 right now and there were odds at Harrah's, I would bet this will come to naught in the sense of a peer review going, yes, unclassified primate DNA in all likelihood found in North America.
That would be so disappointing.
Yeah.
That would be lame. But I agree with Scott. I think at this point, you know how high can you really get your hopes? And just to clarify, I'm not saying that, you know, they're deliberately stoking the fire, so to speak.
Right.
If anything, I think it's the opposite. I think it's not that they're trying to take advantage of the situation. I think it's that they are so amateurish in understanding how to deal with the situation that they're making mistakes along the way that are hurting their case.
Yeah.
I think that's a good
theory.
Yeah,
that's totally fair.
Yeah. But her photo still is really horrible.
It's kind of a glamour shots thing.
It is. Glamour shot and science, do they really go together?
Well, scientists can be glamorous. Haven't you ever seen like Jurassic Park? Remember?
But there's inherent ideas associated with glamour shots. Let's make something look a lot better than it actually is. And boy, does that seem to be represented in this case in more ways than one. Did I just say she's not an attractive woman? I think I just said that. But I've never met her.
No.
I've had way too much coffee today.
Well, you're getting ready for the big game this afternoon.
Yeah, there are some good games on today. I think the Lions and the Lions did a Saints game tonight. Should be quite good.
Oh, that will be good. Who are the Packers playing today?
Packers are playing the Giants in New York. This could be their biggest.
Go Giants. Go Giants.
I'm kind of, well, I'm picking That's for the saying. Picking the Packers because I've got the Bears in a pool that, and the Giants lose, it helps the Bears' playoff chances, especially with Cutler out with the bad thumb.
Okay, this is why I don't like football. Anyway.
Not opposable.
So let's move on. Was announced this past week that Finding Bigfoot comes back, the TV show we love to talk about here on the Bigfoot Show. What?
It's good.
It's coming back January 1st. The apparently, based on what I've seen, the first episode will feature that footage from several years ago now, like at least 10 years ago now, of of the monkey in the tree in New York.
You know, this may be the first show that started, when it first started, it actually was scraping the bottom of the barrel.
It was bumping along down there, you think?
It kind of like, how many shows actually jumped the shark in the
before,
pipe?
First episode.
Right. Before they even get out of the pipe, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this just further reinforces why I have yet to watch the show and have no intention of.
You cannot
ever
be a professional Bigfoot show commentator without watching Finding Bigfoot. It's
I've
required.
Watched clips. I've watched clips and.
So anyway,
I mean, what do I really need to gather? They're going to talk about a video, like you said, that is some, you know, 10 years old, if not, you know, at least in that ballpark.
Yeah, it's about that.
It's been just completely dissected.
Right.
Anybody who, you know, whose opinion could even possibly matter, they've already given it. What mileage can you get out of this? I mean, it's
ratings and money.
Let's just start right there. This is not a Sasquatch. This is not a baby Sasquatch in the tree.
But you know who thinks it is? Matt Moneymaker thinks it is. He absolutely thinks it is. This was the last time I spoke to Matt Moneymaker personally. Yeah. Was him calling me to show me this footage because he absolutely believes it's a baby Bigfoot swinging through the trees.
No, and I just like to point because I know Matt, as I've said before on the show, and I haven't talked to him in a long time, but I think Matt is an interesting. Since I've known him, I don't think he's anywhere near like Biscardi. I mean, there's definitely the hype element with Matt. He definitely likes the hype stuff, but I think Matt is one of those guys who convinces himself.
Yes. And
that's
this is
something because he's involved with it and it's his business. But he's not sitting there going, I'm going to calm this guy.
No.
I don't think he's that. He just
absolutely
loses
not.
His sense of reason.
When he absolutely believes that this footage is a Bigfoot swinging through the trees. And it's not like a Biscardi thing. Where you might imagine Biscardi would like investigate, realize it's a croc and then decide he wants
to track
into it anyway. Matt Moneymaker firmly believes it's just like the Jacobs photo. It's the same kind of deal. But actually I'm looking at the press release now from Animal Planet. It's 15-year-old footage from 1997.
Jeez.
So 15 years old.
Yeah, now. It came to light like a few years after it actually happened.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was about 10 years ago when it first sort of like hit the interwebs. And I remember this thing was passing around sort of from one person to another, and everyone would say like, don't tell anybody you've seen this. So I had like two or three people tell me to give me the link, but I couldn't tell any of them that I'd already seen it because it was one of those things that was getting passed around all secretly like that. And then Matt called me and anyway, it's not a Bigfoot.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say from a purely scientific point of view, I don't think we can say absolutely it's not. Because it's too friggin' grainy. It's clearly a small primate that jumps off the shoulders of another primate into a tree. I think we can all agree to that. I think the strong probability is a guy with a monkey who went to there are people who have monkeys. And it was some kind of music festival, I think, going on.
Yeah.
So you just look at it and you can't glean anything definitive out of it.
I'll be curious to see how it's presented on the show and how. You know, I absolutely expect that Renee will look askance at it because that's her job on the show. But I'll be curious to see what Bobo and Cliff think about it. I don't know if I've ever talked to Cliff about this particular piece.
I don't know. I agree with Sam. I mean, sometimes I want to watch it to see if Bobo has some funny lines.
You gotta watch
it.
I'm
not looking for any type of scientific insight.
We can't talk about it if I'm the only guy watching it. Come on.
Yeah, there's so many other things on TV I'd rather watch or rent a movie. It doesn't, you know, I know Matt, so I know basically what he's going to do. And then Bobo, he can be kind of honestly, I'm not that impressed with Cliff Brackman. I know you know the guy, but the whole thing with those footprints in the other episodes is lame. Lame. So what is it? It's just another cable TV show created. Okay, we got the skeptic, we've got the believers, now we're going to go out and then they're going to amp everything, rehash everything when it comes back from a commercial. Same old crap, man.
I honestly think it would be a more interesting show, and it would be a show I would be willing to watch if they just followed Matt around all day.
Yes.
It would. I mean, if you can make a show about the Kardashians or you know, John and Kate plus 8, then there's absolutely no reason why you can't make a reality show about Matt Moneymaker and Bobo and those guys and just follow them around. Not Sasquatch related at all.
Right. And you know, Matt has a nice set of breasts. So, comparing it to the Kardashians now. Yeah. It's, I don't know, man. Part of it is, I mean, I can understand folks who are new to the phenomena would want to watch it. I mean, but being the seasoned veterans that we are, I mean, we've read a lot. We follow this stuff all the time. So we would know.
As I've said before, I'm not watching the show for any great revelations. I'm watching the show for the entertainment value and because of the subject matter. I'm not watching because I think they're going to like show me something I've never seen or that I'm.
But the thing is, Brian, again, as someone who's actually watched the show as opposed to Sam and I mean, full things, do they make. I mean, when there's. I know that there's intentional humor in the show, but are they pretty clear about that? Or is it all, you know, spooky dramatics and.
No, there's not much intentional humor. I mean, they're not going out there to be funny, especially Cliff. Cliff is like deadly serious about what he does. Bobo's just a funny guy, and I think he's primarily there for just the lighthearted
bits and giggles.
Yeah, the folksy way that he has. So I don't think they go out there and intentionally create humor. I don't think that's part of
their thing. I think when they cut it, they're trying to have it accessible to as many people as possible. Some skeptics would watch it and go, let's watch these idiots because there's certainly.
Oh, no, if you follow it, they give you a hashtag during the show. If you follow it on Twitter and look at it, I mean, 80% of the people are just sitting there totally ragging on it. They're just totally bagging on it. But from the standpoint of Animal Planet, there are people bagging on it and they don't really care. They don't care if you're bagging on it or if you're getting into it. They just want you to be watching it so you see the commercials, right? And I'm there. I'm watching it just to see the commercials. I mean, I like to watch the show because it's entertaining. I don't believe. I mean, it's not going to like stand, shoulder to shoulder with some of the great documentaries of the past. They're not actually going to find a Bigfoot, I don't think. But
yeah, see, here's the thing, though. I would say, Matt is very knowledgeable on the subject, even though he does have this tendency to, fool himself, I think, and his overhyping of stuff. But that said, I think he could actually maybe get close to one of these things. Not super close, not like we've talked about, maybe like a female researcher spending a lot of time out there. But the way it's set up so far, I mean, who's going to believe it after a while? Because they're always hearing shit. So it's kind of like a boy cries wolf scenario.
Yeah.
If they actually do, and again,
the purpose of these shows is not to actually bring back evidence. I don't think that, I would love to have actually talked to Cliff about this because I haven't. But does he really feel like he's doing quality type research, or does he feel that he's there to do it for the camera? I don't know what his answer.
I get
to that
the
would
feeling
be.
That that's it. I think I mean, how can you seriously, if you are part of the show, think you're doing serious scientific work? Unless you're a complete moron. And I know Cliff enough to even to make
no,
that.
No, he's not a complete moron.
I think I could understand an argument that they could make, though. And like you said, nothing is going to come out of the production of this show. And like Scott said, even if it does, big whoop, unless it's just absolutely
Earth. I mean, seriously, if they found like Bigfoot remains, I wouldn't rule that
right.
out.
That's pretty much it.
That's what it's going to take. I mean, the bar is raised so ridiculously high that you're literally going to have to come back with like a Bigfoot petting zoo for anybody to believe you. But if you look at somebody like Cliff or Matt, you look at these guys, they could be saying, okay, yeah, we're not going to find anything on this show, but you know what? This show puts us at the front. When people think Bigfoot, they think BFRO.
Right.
And so if they have a sighting or they know an area or they have a Bigfoot petting zoo, who are they going to contact? They're going to contact us. So you bring the circus through town, you make your show, and in the wake of that circus, you get these reports coming in from these areas that you then have your real people, your real researchers go back and investigate with the hopes of that action turning into something legitimate.
I agree that that's maybe that it is actually the modus operandi of the BFRO and has been a long time. But the dark side of that, like I've said it in the shows before, Matt is one of these the end justifies the mean type of guy, and I think he has not fully like Biscardi, bullshitted, but I think he has knowingly bullshitted at stuff to get that end result. But besides that just being wrong in and of itself, you're also going to bring in all the other idiots. If you act like an idiot, you're going to attract idiots, and they act like idiots on the show. So if you – oh, now we've got 1,000 reports came in. Well, if just one of them – but how many people do they have to investigate those 1,000? So I think in the long run, I don't think it is a good method. I agree with Sam that I think it's at heart what is kind of been the BFRO method, is that we don't judge anything. We assume it to be true, and therefore we'll post it, which of course is the antithesis of science. Science, it doesn't assume anything. So we try to you contemplate all of the possibilities, and if the only one left is A,
you guys hold on a second.
And it happens to be a Bigfoot, then it's great. So
I can't hear anything. Hold on a minute.
We are having technical difficulties. Please stand by.
The hell? I'd leave for a couple minutes due to a technical difficulty, and now you're talking about possums.
We are. Yes. We've changed the entire topic of the show. It's going to be nothing but possums now.
Okay. Yeah, of which I know quite a bit. Yeah. No, I take them. I mean, the last one I didn't take nearly as far as I normally would. I only went about 10 minutes down the road. You know, there's enough between here and there that hopefully he won't be able to find his way back to my barn. So.
My father-in-law had a... not a possum, it was a raccoon, and he took that raccoon away 3 times before he finally took it far enough that it never found its way back.
Well, I will actually recognize this one because he had a nick in his left ear. The top of his left ear was kind of notched.
He was marked. And,
yes, he was marked, basically. And so I'll know if he comes back if it's the same one. Perfect. And if he does, he'll get the death penalty then.
Oh, geez.
Well, I'm pretty sure that he's the possum, that this is the same possum that killed 2 of my little chickens.
There you go.
And if I could have proven it, you know, if a jury had convicted him, I would
DNA,
have killed
DNA analysis.
Yeah, exactly. But as it was, you know, I couldn't be 100% sure. So I showed mercy.
All right. Well, I apologize to everyone who's listening. We had a little technical difficulty, which means I got confused for a few minutes, but we're back now. And we were talking about finding Bigfoot. And I think the last thing Scott was saying was that they're not applying scientific rigor to the making of their little television show.
No.
Isn't that what you were saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's obvious. I just think, well, I think like you said.
But it's just a little television show. I mean, they're not.
Yeah, but you can't say, no, that doesn't give them an excuse. If you have a TV show and if you're clear in the intent to be both humorous and scientific, then fine. But I don't think they are. I think they're trying to pass it off as something that's, I don't know. I don't, maybe that isn't fair. Maybe it I, you know, expect too much from an Animal Planet show to begin with. I don't know.
I think it's too much to ask them to be. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a TV show, right?
And yeah, but that's still. But I mean, when you say that, that's like, what, they can just do anything.
Well, yeah. Theoretically, yeah, but they can do anything.
Well, they can, but that doesn't. I don't know. I think you. I mean, it's like, well, if, you know, it's like saying something's deceptive. Ah, it's a TV show. That doesn't give I mean,
I think that it's fair to hold someone like Melba Ketchum's feet to the fire and say, you know, you are a scientist, right? You are a person who operates in the world of science, so you have to operate in sort of a scientific way. But if you're, you know, Ping Pong Productions, which is the name of the company that makes this show,
aptly titled.
Yeah, I think that, and I also we probably have to separate to some extent the producers from the people on the show. Because this is not the BFRO's TV show.
Yes,
though it's
kind
of presented that way.
Yeah, but they still, and again, I guess there's different levels of criticism to be leveled, I suppose, but against Moneymaker, who claims to have the only scientific organization.
Total bullshit. Yes.
Yeah, that is. And so you're the only organization, but you're willing to go on a show, which is just, from all indicators, pretty half-assed. So it's just, I think why Matt decided, because Matt's usually, for the large part of his Bigfoot career, has been, you know, the guy behind the curtain.
Yeah,
running the day-to-day things. But now he's been willing to come up because, maybe the expeditions aren't going so well, or the income with the economy. So now this is another way to try to generate business. I think it has zero to do, other than maybe, as Sam alluded to earlier, maybe some people come forth with perhaps a legitimate. But I just think the method is pretty shady and scummy and not too cool.
Well, I think that there's – I think the viewer, though, has a certain responsibility. Because if you're watching this show and you're expecting to see like good, legitimate biological science, you turn to the wrong channel.
Right.
Or you have the wrong concept of what real science is supposed to look like. Or if you watch the show and you come away from it thinking, wow, those guys, that's some science right there, you might need to reassess your worldview.
Right.
And you know, if it came out and it had a disclaimer at the beginning that said everything you're about to see for the next 30 minutes or hour or whatever is just sensationalized TV, yeah, that would be fine by me. I mean, you know, that would be truth in advertising. But there's some ambiguity there, and you know, it allows someone. You know, it probably allows them more criticism than they might deserve. But it's
yeah,
how it's...
I mean, I think perhaps you guys are right. I'm being a bit harsh. But again, when you're talking about, you know, I mean, with Moneymaker and Bobo, both members, actually all four are members of the BFRO, the alleged only scientific. And then you go on a very unscientific show. That's more than ambiguity. That's contradiction.
I would say Renee is not a member of the BFRO, and Cliff,
for good reason.
Cliff does not represent himself as a member. And I don't know fully what his status is, but if you look at his blog and everything else, I don't believe that Cliff is. I don't know that he considers himself to be a member of the BFRO, though. I'm sure
he is, though. I mean, whether or not he says it or not on the show, I think he is, though. He was at one.
He was at one point. I don't know. I don't know if he is anymore. Maybe somebody who listens who actually knows him better than I do, will comment on our Facebook wall about this. But I am almost certain that he's doesn't affiliate himself with the BFRO anymore, but he is on the TV show. So take that for what it's worth. All right, let's go on to something else before
God's sakes.
The next technology problem. Jorge,
you sound good now, by the way. You were a little warbly when we came back, but now you're fine.
Well, that's it. That's the pixie.
He was
dust.
Phlegm.
I just had hecta loogie and now I'm fine. Jorge Caranco.
A great question, by the way.
And I'm just going to go to the salient bit of it. We had a question from the last show about what we would do if, you know, a rich person gave us money and that sort of thing. But the part of Jorge's question that I liked was, would we quit our day jobs to go look for Bigfoot? If we had the money, it wasn't a question of money, would we quit our day jobs to full-time go look for Sasquatch?
Wow, he is so presumptive in that, because I don't have a day job.
I was just about to say something.
So that's a big yes for you, is what you're saying. Okay, so but would you suspend all of your other activities? Because obviously, I mean, you're a filmmaker. You go on these adventures. You make these films. You spend time editing them. I mean, that's a job, right? It's not a
yeah. That's how I make my meager living.
Right. So, but would you just put all that on the back burner? Would you stop working on your AP movie right now if someone
AT?
Said
AP?
AP. AP. Oh, I'm thinking of Adrian Peterson. I have Vikings on the brain.
What an exciting documentary. The Associated Press, it's history, the people, the drama. I think that's an awesome question. Frankly, I thought all the really good questions had kind of been answered or been asked anyway. I don't think I would, for the very reasons you pointed out. Maybe, I mean, if it was a combo thing where I would, if I was going to do it, I would want to obviously bring my camera, cameras, and tape the experience as much as possible. But I don't know also if personally I have the patience, and plus, you know, I'm 78 years old now.
Yeah.
And I don't.
You don't have a lot of time left.
Yeah, I would. And again, you know, again, this goes back, we've talked about on the show. I think the ideal situation is one, maybe two women. No, it's not going in this direction. Just hold on.
Well, hold on. I have an idea. So yeah? This is a, you know, all expenses paid for thing. Maybe you could go through a sex change operation.
What do you mean go through?
Go through another one.
Yeah, go back. So from female to male.
To go back
to
right.
Female,
like, I don't even know how they do that. Neat. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be.
Maybe they could give you like a pig's uterus or something. I don't know. Anyway, so you're saying, you're basically saying no.
Probably not. It depends how much money and if they would let me get a Ferrari.
As part of the yes. Research. But you have to drive it on forest roads, so it's not going to last long.
Just constant scraping and sparks flying up. Oh, this isn't scaring the animals at all.
Okay, Sam, what do you think?
You know what? I would really have to think about it. I don't think that I don't think that's a decision that I could make easily. Just because, I mean, from my own personal limited experience in field work and investigations, it is a huge time suck. And it is a huge commitment just to do, you know, weekend long or week long outings. And, you know, you're talking about committing yourself fully to the search, which, you know, you got to be honest going into it. It's going to be open ended. I mean, it's not you're not saying, OK, you know, are you going to go do this for a week or, you know, 2 months or 6 months, yeah, or whatever. You're taking the John Green, the Rene de Hinden model. I mean, you're putting your life into it. And I don't know. I would really have to weigh the pros and cons. I think if I could put myself into a position where I was managing those two women that Scott's talking about, it would be an easier decision because then, you know, you've got somebody else that's actually doing the heavy lifting and, you know, you're back at home base doing the logistics and analyzing the evidence and things like that. But I don't know. I mean, honestly, I probably wouldn't just because, you know, it's like they say, do what you love as a hobby, do what you like as a job. I don't know. There's too much other stuff going on in my life, you know, family wise and friends wise. That's a lot to turn away for something like that.
Would you be willing to use your young daughter as bait, Sam?
if not, you're really not dedicated to this.
Exactly.
See, yeah, that's cold-hearted. You know, as much as she loves being outdoors and as much as she loves to, you know, to play in the woods and down by the creek and everything, I could see her having like that Harry and the Hendersons kind of experience where, sure, you know, she befriends one and I don't even know about it.
Does she like dangling over a pit trap?
No. Oh. She does like to be turned upside down.
Wait a minute.
Down.
That means you've done that to your child?
I wasn't you bastard. Dangling over a pit trap sort of smeared with like, you know, animal
butter
smells. Like, yeah, bacon smells, right.
Yeah, no. She does like to be upside down, and she does like to be spun around, but that's about the extent. Yeah. She draws the line at the pit trap.
Yeah. So. Now, you know, Jorge, in that question, it was a couple of questions. It was really cool. Is that he also asks if after 5 years, if you did it for 5 years, and there was no compelling evidence, would you then be willing to say Bigfoot doesn't exist? And I would say, no, not at all. I think this is something that could go on for many years. And plus, if you're doing, you know, there's obviously a crapshoot element involved here. I would think, and I'd assume it'd be the same with you two guys, is if you were going to do this, you would first have to pick a zone. At least you'd start in, you know, historically rich area of purported sightings. I know where we talked about it before. Where I would go is the thing that happened to me in 92, probably that area. And you kind of limit your zone because you have to. I mean, because there's so much friggin' forested, steeply sloped, densely vegetated areas, especially in, you know, the Northwest. And then, you know, if these things exist, maybe that was the year that they weren't going through there or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. It's I like this idea of having like a home base cabin. Again, it depends how much money that would be given. You have the home base cabin, it's two women unlimited. Out of the field.
Unlimited.
They come back at the end of the day.
Oh, all scratched up.
All scratched up.
Mosquito bites.
Needing a massage. They need to be rubbed down.
I need to shower them. And yes, okay, I've changed my mind. Yes.
You're on board. Okay, so one of them is Melba Ketchum. No, I'm kidding.
You know, filmmaking is kind of... No, anyway.
So I think that... I think Sam touched on the only sort of problem I would have with this pretend scenario is that if you're going to do it, you'd have to do it, you know, you'd have to be out there and for long periods of time and that sort of thing. And being away from the world would be hard, you know, even though, you know, technically you get to sort of explore your, you know, your interests and everything else, and there's no limitations on you, but being away from your family and everything for that long would be difficult. I mean, that said, I don't know. I sound like I thought we'd all say yes. I'm kind of surprised you guys both said no.
Well, I if I could be having a face-to-face encounter with a Sasquatch and within a 30-second time period do a Facebook update, I'm good. I could, you know, that's fine.
So
that was the joke. That was the end of the joke.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where you chortle a little bit, or that boy.
I'm out of pity laughs. I'm sorry. No, I think I could do it. I mean, you know, I think I could see it as a career, but only in the puppet master sort of sense. You know, I couldn't imagine myself being the one that goes out there and you know, Jane Goodall's it. For the rest of my life. I don't think I could do that.
You know, here's the thing too. Here's the thing, which I think I'm going to try to make this even more enticing, because when we're talking about using Goodall as an example, she's going out to these things were, you know, chimps, using her example. She knows that they existed. So she would then go out into zones, like knowing something was there. There was the evidence. This is something where you're searching for the evidence. Cause I think a lot of this would deal with putting up camera traps. I mean, a boatload of camera traps. Then you'd have a home base to go out to, some kind of centralized, I always envision some type of like a van or a room where you've got the different screens and, you know, I shave my head. I've got a cat in my lap, a monocle. Anyway. And a lot of it is actually, I think you would not be out there. You set up sensors to see if something's going to be out there. So in the meantime, you could be back in the cabin with the two women a lot of the time watching movies. Maybe luckily making
showering.
Yeah. Just
showering and massaging. That would be it.
I can just see a shot of me like rubbing down one of the women. Hi, I'm Scott Harriet, professional Bigfoot researcher. Right now I'm hard at work on these various slopes you see around me right now. You're saying, boy, you're rubbing someone's shoulders.
It writes itself, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, so I don't think it's not something seriously. It would not be something where each day you're pounding better word. You're not out there in the forest trudging up hills. I don't think that's the way this is going to happen. I think you'd initially do that with setting up the various camera traps. And I mean, and again, a boatload. I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds that you would have to be willing. They would have to, you know, that they would be stolen, perhaps have some kind of centralized area where that data could come back and then react to it. Otherwise, just like, okay, I'm going to go up this canyon today.
Well, I think stupid. That if you're going to set up hundreds of camera traps, then you are going to be out there all the time taking care of them, because it's going to take you a month to get around.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think you would have to be, I mean, it would take a lot, and this is where you would have a team.
Yeah. He says up to five people.
Up to five people. Five people would be good. See, maybe one more. And again, you know, that whole process would be pretty involved. I mean, I think someone with rigorous scientific methodology who has an interest in has to be passionate about the subject, and they all have to be female. If you can meet all those requirements for me personally. And then you set them up, and then you just let for a while, then you go back, and it is maintaining. But I think now with the technology, man, and maybe even some solar paneling, keeping them powered.
To the best of my knowledge, and we've actually, in the TBRC, have done some research into this, there's no such thing as a wireless camera that you can see what it's seeing in real time. That doesn't exist.
Well, actually, it does exist, but it's very primitive. They've got these portable... And this would, again, depending how much money you got, but you can actually set up your own little portable mini cell tower. This guy was doing it on some,
but
I saw it on.
If you're talking about a game cam that can see in the dark and respond to motion, I mean, I'm not aware that there are products. I mean, could you cobble something together? I mean, if you set up your own wide area network and. You know, all
well,
Wi-Fi.
Well,
there's
also the other day. Let's say you had a, I don't know, 10 square mile area, something like if you had one of those little portable balloon dealies that you could get up,
the balloons
centralized
are back.
Balloon dealies with little bombs to drop on these fuckers. No, is up in the air that would then be the kind of the recipient of the signals, and then that is beamed back to wherever you are. That definitely doable. Would cost dough. It's not something you're gonna buy down.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing off the shelf.
No.
I mean, yeah. You know, you can't go out and just order it. But yeah, Scott's right. I mean, I looked into the technology, and this has been, you know, 3-4 years ago, so there's no telling how far it's advanced since then. But, I mean, yeah, literally, you could set up your own little broadcast station.
Yep.
And that was kind of what I was considering was, you know, finding a high ridge. Setting up this broadcast station and then having these wireless cameras that transmitted back to this base station that could then transmit to me, you know, being 5-6 miles away.
So I'm not going to say that the type of technology does not exist to do what you just described. I don't believe that you can deploy it in the field in a way that is useful because you're going to have incredible power issues because you're having a wireless signal. You've got cameras going all the time. You've got to figure out a way to power those. I mean, you could, you know, sit on the internet for a couple hours and come up with a parts list and say, here's how I would do it. But then trying to actually deploy that, I think would be.
Well, again, this is working with the assumption of relatively unlimited funds. And I don't think it would be that hard. I mean, what you would have to do, again, is going back and keeping the cameras charged. But right now, I think there's got to be cameras out there where at least 2 months.
There's cameras out there now.
Right.
I was just pricing some the other day. They're advertising a year.
No, exactly right. You take, but no, you take a Reconyx camera, and I have one of these, and you put lithium batteries in it, and that baby will stay charged, for a year, no problem. But it's not constantly recording. It's taking pictures when it sees something, and it has no Wi-Fi built into it. All of these things are significant power drains. So what I'm saying is that the existing camera trap technology, those batteries last forever, but that's not what you guys
are talking
about.
I just thought of an idea. This would be good. It's a combo strategy thing. You get a couple of chimps on bicycles, you know, revving, keeping them charged, because not only do you have another primate that might attract a Sasquatch, but you can keep the batteries going.
The chimps sweat. I mean, maybe if they get them going really, like, maybe they'll start sweating.
Pheromones.
And they'll be little pheromone generators.
That'd be awesome. And then equip each of the chimps with a GoPro camera on their heads.
On its head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I like that.
It's a little, you know, it's out of the box.
I think that's
say.
How this mystery will be solved. You have to think outside the box, just like that.
So tell us, Dr. Meldrum, how did you come to this startling evidence? I had a chimp with a GoPro camera strapped on its head, powering on a treadmill, and then one of these things came and killed it, and it bit its head off.
I can just see the chimp on the treadmill with a banana dangling just out of arm's reach, you know, so it's like constantly trying to get the banana. Who's the higher primate now, buddy? All right, so hopefully that answered Jorge's question. For me, absolutely, I would do it.
Now wait, but could, I mean, would the family go along? I mean, but
no. So he says you got a team of five people. I think it's true. It'd probably be six. I think you do some sort of rotating team thing. I mean, this is not unlike what what the TBRC did this past summer. You have rotating teams going in and out, so they kind of overlap. It isn't a person who's out there for 5 years, and so you've got maybe 2 weeks in, 1 week out, kind of a thing. And
well, in that case, I want to change my vote.
Well, yeah,
I'm gonna flip flop.
So I mean, I don't imagine that like. When he asked this question, would I personally sit in a tent for 5 years? No, I would not. But I would work as part of a team where I could go in and then come out occasionally and then go back in again on whatever that rotation would be. And I think based on what I know happened this past summer or what I've been told and what I experienced personally.
Very good. We do amend that.
Well,
science police here.
I was there for part of it, so I do know some things that happened.
I'm just saying the thing with Daryl saying you saw one. I mean, you weren't there, but he told you that, and you value his opinion.
And I believe it
to
be true.
And that's fine. But
so
we don't know if it's true.
But what I'm saying is I think that like long-term being in the spot, and of course, again, the tricky bit is being where you think they are, right? Because if they're not there, then you're not really doing any good. That's obviously step one, and it's the biggest and hardest step. But
even it's just going to say along those lines, right? Let's say that you have this camera trap scenario, right? Centralized base, two women you get to shower with every day.
Every day.
Idea. Every day.
Right.
And then you get camera 31 has a hit. You see this image, upright, doesn't look like a guy in a suit. You know, holy crap.
Well, it
so
would
now you
look
know
like
this
a guy
zone.
In a suit, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But a really good suit if it was, right? So now you just know the zone. Then what's the next step? I would think then you would then, you have the two ladies. I'm sorry, I keep joking about that. But, you know, the researchers then have to focus in that area. They then go and stay in that area. They, you know, maybe utilizing techniques that Fosse or Goodall have used, just being quiet there. It's not something, again, you go, we're going to go find it. Now, that is ridiculous. You're never going to get close. You have to go. They'll probably know if they are there that you were there. And then hopefully they are curious and come investigate you. And again, more cameras stuff set up. So it's just the. You know, there's a reason if these things exist, there's a reason that it hasn't happened yet because there isn't a lot of them. They're really smart and they're waiting for the chicks.
Okay. They're waiting.
How many times have I said chicks?
Not enough.
Yeah.
Kind of a related topic, and we're kind of segueing in there by ourselves anyway, but Bert Smith asked on the Facebook wall, what are the benefits and disadvantages to working inside an organized bigger group versus being on your own? Like basically what are the trade-offs, you know, what that kind of thing.
Resources.
I think the smaller the group, the better. The bigger the group, you have danger of just group think. And I think a perfect example would be something like although maybe it's not exactly what he's talking about, but BFRO expeditions. People go out and people think they hear, and then you get wishful thinking involved, and there really isn't any hard evidence. Plus, the more people that are out there, I think, obviously, is going to decrease your chances. The perfect example of that, I think, is when they, you know, remember the initial Yeti searches in the 50s? Remember they had like 100 people going
that
on.
That wasn't counting the Sherpas and the pack animals. They had
exactly.
like 100, yeah.
So if we're talking about a shy, higher primate, you know, again, remember that they're going to be so much more sensitive than you are and know your presence. You think you're being quiet. You're probably being loud to them. So less is more. And I think overall, it's definitely would be the way to go.
Well,
I don't really think there is an advantage to group other than maybe the switching off thing like you alluded to before, Brian, but having any kind of big amount of people in the woods looking for Bigfoot, I think is dumb, and it's not gonna. It's you're decreasing other than just being in the forest, which would increase your chances as opposed to being in Manhattan. You are hurting your chances the more people are out there.
Well, no, that's not how I read the question, though. I mean,
he's not talking about like actual operations. He's just talking
right. He's just talking about, you know, being a member versus, I guess, being a non-member.
You mean like cards and rings and stuff like that, or?
Well, I actually, regardless of what he meant, I luckily disagree with what Scott just said. Everything that Scott just said, I I think that he's talking about the advantages or disadvantages. I would say, having been someone who was both not in a group and in a group, that I think that, you know, the first thing Sam said was right. It's resources. You know, if you're by yourself, then you have to buy all that crap yourself. And you have to do everything by yourself. If you've got a group of people with you, and especially a group that can raise funds, then you don't have, it's not all on you. I mean, you're still, as an individual member, bringing a lot of stuff to the party. You're still, a lot of stuff gets pooled. I mean, I don't even know how much stuff over the years has ended up in somebody else's truck and disappeared, but, there are some advantages to working in numbers. Just
yeah. And what I was referring to was strictly being in the forest.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
I
mean, right.
Yeah. I apart from planning and stuff like that. Yes. But I think when it comes time, if you're actually going to try to increase your chances of getting some kind of evidence, again, this would be assuming dealing with a live one, as opposed to looking, if you had some really organized, scientifically based search for perhaps remains, then the more the better, depending on the quality of the people involved. I got another Bigfoot bone over here, Jim. I'm sure of it.
Now, you say you haven't seen Find a Bigfoot, but that was actually in one of the episodes.
What?
They took like 200 people out of the woods and did this like line through the woods, and somebody found a deer carcass, and Matt Moneymaker said it was a Bigfoot kill. See what you're missing?
Wow.
Speaking from personal experience, I think it depends entirely upon your access to the group. In my experience, I've been part of two different organizations, and in both cases, I never did anything directly with either group in terms of actually getting out into the field and doing anything, simply because I was so remote from the rest of them.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that there weren't certain advantages, as far as being able to, just having access to other people, to use as a soundboard or for advice and, conversation and those kinds of things. That was helpful. But from logistics and tactics and all of those other things, it didn't benefit me at all. Now, if you had a small local group or regional group, I think that could be a huge advantage for a person, because then you've got people who you can consistently go out with, who you know, who you can share resources with and equipment with. I think that is probably the ideal situation. Being on my own and being independent, there's still people within other groups who I know I could go to and say, hey, look, I have this photo or this video or this sample. Can you help me out? And they would be able to do that. In the end, I think it just comes down to access. How accessible are the resources that are in that group to you?
Yeah, I think that regional is definitely the way to go. I think that you have to have face-to-face, real contact with the people in your group. I just think that that's critical, because you don't really know a person until you hang out with them in the woods for a week. You know what I'm saying? I mean, otherwise, you're just sort of...
yeah.
You're just sort of making an inference based on how they write or something like that. I totally agree that regional is probably the way to go. And actually, going back to something Scott said about groupthink, I my experience is actually the opposite of that. And again, who's in the group makes a huge difference to this, but having a group of people who you can take your experiences back to and have them challenge you is invaluable. So that's why I think actually a smaller group would be detrimental to that, because you get three people who only go out together and they start agreeing with one another, and there's nobody to challenge them and say, maybe that was a woodchuck, or something like that. So I think that's actually a benefit of being in a larger group, because when I say larger, I'm not talking like hundreds of people. I'm talking like, 30, 40, 50 people tops.
I think, as long as, in discussions with people, group members or otherwise, as long as you're honing or reinforcing the scientific method, I think you're fine. And I don't mean go out there in a lab coat and a slide rule, you know, I mean, because I do think things like attitude and what your mindset is important. Mm-hmm. And where you're at, I mean, if you, I think these things would pick up on aggressive behavior and, you know, just as other animals do, they know when somebody's, you know, creeping through the woods, go, well, that probably means something stalking me, as opposed to just being more casual about it. But the more you can have those things yourself and just trying to be as objective, be objective, yet, you know, have that mental receptivity without going off into la la land, which it just amazes me how many people do. I mean, there's just a lot of crazy friggin' people in the world. They go, every time they go out, they think they're having, there's some nut job. Have you heard of this guy, Andy Robson?
No.
This guy's saying he's going, he's seeing him all the time. He's talking to him. He's on Facebook. I don't know. It just, it's so incredible. Really, well, you see them all the time. You can't take a picture. Oh, I don't want to do that in, because I respect their, yeah. Well, how convenient. Now, you know, so I don't know. It's a field that's fraught with terrible scientific usage for the most part. Thank God there's three perfect beings right here on that show that we can.
Well, I think Brian really, really hit the nail on the head about becoming insulated, because I think you do see that a lot. I think that when you go online and you go to these forums and these, you know, different websites, you see a lot of reinforced thinking.
Yeah.
You know, basically, you know, you have a small group of people, and one person puts forward an idea, and, you know, that idea is just, it's, you know, it's confirmed by the next person and confirmed by the next person.
It's like it becomes a mini cult. It's like their true
belief. Exactly. And you have this confirmation bias. And so it is good to have someone to occasionally come along and, you know, just take a straight whiz in your Cheerios and say, you know, that this...
New
this
show
is,
title.
This is not, you know, it's not all unicorns and rainbows. You know, more often than not, what you're coming back with is nothing. But you know, it also comes back on you, though. I mean, are you the kind of person who is going to go out and look for the truth, or are you going out
whatever
to be exactly, or are you going out strictly for the purpose of experiencing a Sasquatch or Sasquatch activity? You know, if you're in that latter group and that's all you care about, then that's all you're going to do. I mean, me personally, yeah. I'm perfectly content to go out and have nothing but normal activity happen, simply because I just enjoy being out there. You know, I enjoy being in nature. I enjoy hearing known animal sounds. I mean, for me, you know, there's nothing more fun than being out there in the woods at night and
checking your still.
Exactly.
You can't let fire go out.
Yeah. Right. You got to tend that fire, man, especially when the mash is fermenting just right. But no, you know, being out there and, you know, hearing the barred owls calling or calling up a coyote, you know, those kinds of things. I mean, those are great memories to me. And that's more than enough justification to keep going out there. But if you're somebody who has to go out there to experience a Bigfoot or, you know, with the idea that if you didn't experience Bigfoot, it was a wasted trip or it was a bad trip.
Matthew Johnson. Sorry.
You are going to start having you're going to start having things happen, whether they are or not, because that's what you need to have happen. And when you have people around you that are that same mentality, it's a recipe for disappointment.
Sam, I really wish you hadn't said whiz in your Cheerios, because I have to go. I'll be back in about a minute, guys. I don't have a cup here. Bye. Hold on, I'll be back in a minute.
Right.
Just carry on
with
me.
We'll carry on without you.
I'm afraid if he did have a cup, we'd be able to hear it.
We would again. I think that the really good point that you're making there. So is regardless of whether or not you're in a group or how big your group is, or if you're individual, you have to have someone, or you have to have a way. I think two things: you have to stay grounded and keep your head sort of on the facts and keep yourself in a reasonable place. And I think that you have to be open to have your experiences challenged and or interpreted in a way that may not fit for you. I'm thinking of this guy that was on, that we talked about in the last show with the video of the old man or whatever it was.
Larry Lund. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was it Larry Lund or was it Larry? Anyway, Larry could be Lund. You're probably right. You know, his whole thing is like, I don't care. You know, skeptics, get the hell away from me. It's like
Surface.
Larry Surface. Right. Larry Surface. Yes. You know, his attitude was, if you don't believe it, then whatever. I don't want to hear from you. Like, right. That's a problem right there. That's a big old red flag. Obviously, Larry's independent, and he doesn't have anybody helping him stay grounded.
Well, and you, let me gather my thoughts here. You have to have a certain transparency.
Yeah.
And you have to understand when you're going to talk about something and when you're not. And if you're going to talk about it, you need to be completely transparent about it. You know, no teasing.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, no hype.
Right.
None of that. No, you know, you have to come and register at our forum in order to see what we're talking about. You know, no. If you're going to put it out there, put it out there completely, you know, open disclosure, and nothing else. Or don't talk about it at all.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. If it's not something, if it's not ready for prime time, then you shouldn't be talking about it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, no hints or allusions or anything like that. Keep it under wraps until you're ready to completely talk about the entire thing.
Yeah. And it's, I think it kind of, it reveals in the person. I mean, you know, if somebody who's consistently doing that, and I think it's okay to want to be, you know, to be heard if you experience something, but somebody who does that consistently without anything to back it up, it seems to be in it more for the attention than the actual science of it. So, speaking of transparency, excellent whiz.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Are you well hydrated?
I was.
now he's a little thirsty.
Yeah.
Scott, recently you were a guest on Monster Talk.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us? So Monster Talk, for people who don't know, Ben Radford is on Monster Talk. And what's the guy who's the host?
Oh, Blake.
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 Last name. Yeah, Blake. Yes. Yeah, he's good. He only needs one name. Blake Smith, maybe? Blake? I'm sorry, Blake, if you hear this.
Blake Smith. Yeah, his name is Blake Smith.
Blake Smith, yeah. God, I just picked the easiest name and I lucked out. no, Blake Smith. Yeah, it was pretty good. You know, and I guess part of it when they asked me was in response to, because we did a pretty good job of raking Radford's alleged claims over the coals.
So is that why they called you on? Were they calling you on to take you to the woodshed for that show?
I don't know. Right. They just felt my podcast savvy was so incredibly good that it could only help their ratings. No. I think one reason is Blake used to be a fan of Tech TV and I was on there for a few years. So he remembers me from the screensavers and he knew I was on this. So I think that was part of it. But it was fun. It was better than I thought. You know, well, Ben had made the claim, I guess, on our page that, you know, well, that the in some of his arguments were being misrepresented on the Discovery Channel page. And he's a nice guy. He still made some arguments I think are kind of weak. I mean, he still brought up the whole, well, if you're having sightings in all over the United States, if these things are real, they therefore should be everywhere.
Right.
It's horrible logic. No, how come it couldn't be that in certain regions of the state there's people who are more prone to either psychosis or bullshitting, and therefore none of them are true. That's possible, isn't it? And then in some areas there's actually a mix of hoaxing and real. And it still doesn't quite register with him anyway. And then he also brought up, I don't think not as a weak, but still kind of weak argument is that, well, with the advent of technology and people, everybody having a camera, why don't we have any clear footage of a Sasquatch? And I thought, you know, that's not that great because first off, if these things are real, they're very rare. They don't hang around long. And plus, photographic evidence is going to have to be so extraordinary. And I think voluminous to serve as any kind of strong evidence, because most of us skeptics and most, I think, thinking believers realize that it's not going to serve. It's, you know, anything short of a body or part of a body, DNA sample, is not going to be proof. So I pointed out, I thought, you know, the thing is, it takes a probably minimum, if you're driving or walking, to get a camera ready to go and shoot, it probably takes minimum about 10. I mean, as someone who shot video on the trail on the AT this year, you know, and had it right in a fanny pack. And so I see something I want to tape, unzip, turn the camera on. It's about 10 seconds. So, and I'm, you know, using
a professional.
A professional, you know, add at least another 5 seconds. And how many, you know, when you look at Sasquatch sightings, how many of them really hang around that long? So I don't think that's a particularly strong argument. But I actually, one thing, and again, I just want to say I had a great time and they were really cool. But then the one thing that kind of mystified me, an argument Ben made, was I said, well, what do you think then of someone like Jane Goodall, obviously a respected primatologist, and she thinks they probably exist. What do you think of that? And Radford says, well, how do we know if Bigfoots exist, that they're primates? I mean, how do you answer that?
What does it got to do with that?
I don't know, Ben, because the vast majority, if not all of the sightings, involve the description of a primate, an upright, hair-covered. And so that was so I don't know.
But also, it totally sidesteps the point of you're trying to make, is that Jane Goodall, who, you know, is purportedly a woman of science, right, would say that she believes them to exist. And so his response is, well, they're not primates. Maybe they're not primates. Right.
Yeah, it's not that he's saying they're not primates. He's saying,
how do we know
Jane
they're
Goodall,
primates?
His argument, Jane Goodall is a primatologist. We don't
That's
know
all she knows is primates. So
yeah.
And if they're not primates, she's wrong. I don't understand. I mean, I don't.
No. His argument is not even that. What he's saying is he accepts that she's an exceptional primatologist. But how do we know if Bigfoots are real? Are they primates? And it's like, dude, look at the descriptions. The thousands of descriptions. They clearly fit a primate motif. There's not. And he kind of tried to argue that, and I just thought it was.
Maybe they're lizard people wearing fur coats.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Dinosaurs. But where we did agree, we strongly agreed, and we thought the majority, if not the vast majority, of physical evidence presented so far, and some of the more famous bits of evidence, are weak. I would agree with them on that. I think the Patterson film is probably a guy in a suit. Skookum cast, I think, is weak in the sense it's inconclusive. And plus, I think Desert Yeti from Bigfoot Forums made a very compelling case that it's merely an elk lay. Yes, you have thousands of footprints, but until we have a Bigfoot foot, how do we know what's fake, what isn't? Certainly compelling enough to warrant further investigation. I think that's really where our area of differentiation is that, yeah, I think there's more than enough to warrant further investigation. And they obviously totally distrust people so far, and they were obviously abused as children. I don't know. It was a good time though. They were nice guys, and if they hear this, thanks again for asking me on, because it was fun. And I put a plug in for the show, and I think Blake would be a great guy to have on the show.
Yeah, we should have him on in January.
Yeah, it'd be good, and he's willing to do it.
Cool. Speaking of future shows, I would like to do one more show in 2011. I would like to do we did this, our very first show actually was a year in Bigfoot, and we haven't done one since really. So I'd like to do another one this year, another year in Bigfoot. I'll probably be putting that on our Facebook wall at some point. But if you're listening to this, or if you're on the show right now, maybe you want to be thinking about, I'm not going to say like the 10 biggest, because I don't know if there were 10, so we're just going to say some non.
It was a pretty good year, though. I would say better than maybe the last couple.
It was a good year, but it certainly did not live up to the hype and expectations that were at the beginning of the year. I mean, you got to remember, this was supposed to be the year
of
the Sasquatch.
Yeah, this was it. This was it. So the year of the Sasquatch is almost over, and we'll do, hopefully.
Still time. I mean, what if, like, right at the stroke of midnight.
Well, then next year, that would be next year would be the year of the Bigfoot. Because even if it happened at the stroke of midnight, no one's going to find out about it.
Well, that would be weird. What if a trucker hit him like at 1 minute or like 10 seconds to midnight and then it dies in the new year? Then you've got a whole PR nightmare.
Yeah, huge nightmare. That's what I'd be thinking about.
Or is it like your taxes? Are you doing your taxes, you know, for the year prior? Are you dealing with your Sasquatch evidence from the year prior? You know,
it's so confusing. It's another reason why this phenomenon is so fascinating.
Yeah, right. No, I anyway. So that's it. That's pretty much all the topics that I had. And I don't know. Did we not cover anything that we should have? Oh.
Well, actually, maybe a couple quick things.
There's no such thing on this show as a quick thing.
No, I know. I wanted to make just one or two quick points about, I know, oddly enough, it deals with the PGF, because I know there are those it's quick, dude. It's very quick.
No, here's the thing, though. You're going to say something, and then I'm going to feel compelled to reply to your hell you're going to say.
No, actually, it's not necessarily a skeptical argument. I just think it's an interesting point that I'm guessing you posted it or did somebody else about Bill Munns scanned the quote unquote lost 202 frames of the second Bluff Creek reel that shows the alleged footprints made by
I posted that.
So it's cool. And I think Bill actually presents it very, for the most part, objectively. But he brings up something in it that I think is an interesting aspect to that, and he alludes to it when he says, if you notice on this print, it's actually kind of one of the more of all the prints that are on there, it's kind of fakey because it has a real hard edge on it, but he points out that you can see kneeling marks or not that one,
yeah,
it's the next one, I'm sorry,
right.
The casting one, he goes, that, you know, that you can see kneeling marks there, so that would explain why there's that mark there. But he kind of alludes that, well, you don't see them next to the other ones. And I think that is worthy of investigation, because you can kind of tell ground that has been, you know, scuffed over and ground that has been hard and crustified, as it will, and doesn't look like it's been messed with. So I think it's worthy to look at that to see if on some of those footprints, if it does look pretty crustified, as it were, and it doesn't look like anybody else had stepped close to it, then it's an interesting argument on the pro side.
Yeah, well,
I still think it's
I think that what he's trying to get at there are people who think that the tracks were created after the film was made and not as part of the film event. And
right.
I think they were made during the film by Wood Ape that was walking along the sandbar, but that's neither here nor there.
How dare you call Bob Hieronymus a wood ape?
Yeah, well, if the suit fits, right? So anyway,
which it does, actually.
Yeah, show me how it fits him. So I think that's what he's trying to get at, is that there was nobody working on these casts or these tracks, not the cast. There is somebody working on the cast. There's nobody working on the tracks, but I've never understood why would they make extra tracks? Why would they go to the trouble
just to make it a fuller? I mean, he'd done it. The evidence is strong that Patterson, before this happened, had made phony tracks. It's strong. Long has good documentation.
We're not. You know what? Anything that Greg Long says, I'm gonna have a problem.
No, you can't do that.
You
can't, because he actually interviewed people.
Sam, did you want to say something?
I feel like I should be throwing out a yellow flag.
Thank you very much.
No, refereeing. Well, now, my understanding was that it was very clear that from even Patterson that as part of the film that he had made test tracks or had made a trackway for the purpose of the film. And there seemed to be some ambiguity about whether or not some or all of the footage of the trackway was supposed to be from the from the subject, or if this was part of the trackway that Patterson made for the film.
Yeah, and also, I'm not independent of saying that it was hoaxed. I'm not the Patterson film, but fact, the documentation's pretty clear that Patterson made tracks before, that he had done for dramatization purposes.
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, I know specifically someone like Rick Knoll. Rick Knoll has a gorilla suit, and Rick Knoll has as part of his interest in tracks, he has made tracks to know how tracks can be made. And that doesn't mean that if Rick Knoll ever comes out of the woods, with a videotape of a Bigfoot walking through a creek, that there's anything wrong with that videotape. So unless you're saying Greg Long has documented proof of Patterson making tracks and then passing them off as real, I don't really understand how that's.
No, I'm just saying all I said. No. All I'm saying is that Patterson knew and had made tracks before. That's all that it wasn't some to make any claim that he had no experience making alleged Bigfoot tracks doesn't fit what is pretty well established. That's all I'm saying for hoax purposes or otherwise.
I guess I don't know what the, yeah. So I'm just
saying. No, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. It's just anybody who thinks, well, the old rodeo cowboy argument that he was just a dumb old cowboy that couldn't have done.
Made little stagecoaches, right?
He did.
Yeah.
He was very innovative with that. And, and when he showed up in Yakima, suddenly Bigfoot prints started showing up too. I think
crazy
that's kind of
how that works, isn't it?
It's crazy.
As soon
and
as someone
if you've
starts
been
looking
to Yakima,
for something, they start finding things.
It's
like
amazing.
That. It's nuts.
It is.
Was there anything else quick you wanted to add to the show?
One other thing. I think we talked about it last on the show. The book Recasting Bigfoot. And Paul
that got brought up on the page.
There's two books. Yeah, Sefton Disney brought up.
Yes.
I'm trying to find it. He mentioned it twice, and I last said to him that I don't think any of us. So there's two books. The book that Paul brought up.
Yes.
We talked about on the last show, the one that you were not on. And that's a different book than this book. He's talking about Guillen Quasar. What?
Yeah, it looks really interesting. It actually got, and I actually ordered it today.
Oh, good.
It has five customer reviews, all five stars on each one. However, the one guy, this is one 5-star review. Apparently he didn't understand the process because I'll be honest, I have not read the book, but I've heard an interview with the author on the Da-da-da broadcast. And then much of the author's theory hangs on photographic evidence by the explorer Francois Deloise. He uses the Deloise ape argument in here. The picture of a supposed large unknown primate discovered blah, blah, has been thoroughly debunked. So somehow this guy trashes the book, hasn't seen it, but yet gives it 5 stars.
That's pretty typical on Amazon. I think
that 5 must be really bad. But anyway, there's some other good reviews on it. Basically, he's. He's making the argument that Sasquatch, he's trying to debunk the Gigantopithecus theory, and he apparently does a pretty good job, according to this David O. Marks guy, that going back farther in Native American lore and Indian artwork, suggesting it's another type of anthropoid, and he compares it there. It just looks kind of interesting. I don't know.
Well, the impression I got is, for starters, apparently he's also investigated the Bermuda Triangle, and everything I started coming up with at first was all about his Bermuda Triangle work. But the gist of what I read was he seemed to be making the argument that Bigfoot, as it's presented today, is nothing but a social construct, and that. You know, when you make the argument that Bigfoot is real because of the historical references and the First Nations references, that you're not being accurate. And that what it basically boiled down to was that long ago in the Pacific Northwest, there was one or more primitive tribes. And from these primitive tribes came the stories of the Sasquatch people. And that along the way, you know, through Anglicanization or whatever, right. And TV misunderstanding, shows. Mistranslations, you know,
like
these,
the Patterson film.
These primitive people got blown out of proportion and turned into these 8-9 foot tall hairy hominids, which I guess he's arguing never existed. It looks interesting, but
yeah, I don't know how. Yeah, it
just
seems
on
like
the
a
surface.
New angle.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, your job will be to report back.
Oh God, I know it's 290 pages.
290 pages.
I don't know.
Good
apparently
God.
The research he apparently does is, I mean, as far as making his case, again, some of these guys seem to.
I hope half of that is pictures.
Bramford seems. What's that?
I hope half of that is pictures.
It's know, extra large.
It's interesting. You know, who knows if he's just trying, if he's one of these guys, just, I got to get a new angle. Yes. Bigfoot was real, but it really, it's not what it's been morphed into.
Well, you know, if you think about it, that's the perfect angle for someone who wants to win the whole game. Because what he can say is you're all wrong. I'm the only one to discover the truth. But since it was this ancient tribe and they have long gone extinct, no one else can prove it, study it, or do anything otherwise. Huh. And if I hadn't come along, nobody would be any the wiser. So I'm the guy who won the Bigfoot game.
Yeah. And again, it's all if you're just using old stories and it's not proof or it's just speculation. So I'm guessing it's going to be one of those books. It's going to have interesting elements to it, and maybe there is some truth to it. But I would just initially think with people I've talked to directly and still the volumes of stories, even if the majority of which were bullshit or misinterpretations, it still seems to be the case that there's something out there that fits kind of the typical description that people still talk about. If not necessarily Giganto, at least something – hair covered, not a lost human tribe per se, but another type of higher primate, which is human like, but pretty clearly not human. Let's go to a cliff.
Well, there's also, you know, the Giganto thing. It isn't as if I think some people when they hear it compared to Giganto and then they see recreations of what Giganto may have looked like.
Yeah,
it isn't like that's what we're talking. I mean, presumably, if it is a descendant of Giganto, then it would have also evolved along the way like we did, right? So you wouldn't be looking at something that was a carbon copy of Gigantopithecus.
Yeah.
There would have been some
variation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe like what Coleman argues, it's not an either or. Maybe there is more than one type of unclassified primate up there. That doesn't strike me as being so far out of the realm of plausibility. I mean, there's so much area up there. And if you, again, higher primates, very smart, and it could, maybe there are. And who knows, maybe DNA markers would indicate something like it's so close to humans, something even closer than what chimps are to us, that it would all maybe even be difficult to distinguish. Gosh, it's so human, except this little thing, who knows?
Yeah, but that's the thing. The people that say that, well, if it has DNA that's closer to us than chimps, then obviously, it's human or something along those lines. I mean, that doesn't hold water at all. Chimps have what, 98%? They don't look anything like us. They're not anything like us. They're not human by any stretch.
You haven't met my uncle.
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. All right. Well,
is he a silverback?
No, but he. Does an exercise bike every day with a banana dangling in front of
him. All right, so going once. Well, Paul's not here to keep dragging us out forever. So
he is the king dragger outer.
He is. He never wants to let go. He just his thing. He wants to just keep going forever. Anyway, well, I guess we're done.